Well, I want to just honor everybody's time who's attended on time, and we do have about 50 or 60 minutes this morning. Thank you, webinar attendees, and welcome to our latest online briefing entitled Set Customer Expectations Higher, where in about 50 or 60 minutes, we will distill for you the essence of what's literally thousands of pieces of data that's been collected about sales and sales leadership by Lou Schachter and his team, all of which is summarized in his best-selling book on sales called Mind of the Customer. And Lou is going to kind of update us on the unique twist that the current economic climate adds to this previous work that he's done and sort of give us new ways of looking at the selling models and leadership models in that context. So this webinar is part of a series, and I think Lou has a slide that will show you a number of sales effectiveness and efficiency webinars that Advantage will host, and we keep a listing of these sessions and the registration information at our website at www.advantageperformance.com. It's nice to see many of you return from previous sessions. We get lists of those of you who have registered, and it's nice to know that you're getting enough out of it that you're a repeat attendee. So thank you for those of you who are kind of subscribed to the series. And we encourage you to check the site routinely because future topics do change, and we add topics of interest as we hear about things in the marketplace that are very contemporary. And if you don't, we'll probably email you relentlessly so you succumb to our invitations sooner or later. But anyway, just kidding. It's there on the site for you to see and to join us. My name is John Hoskins, and I'm the co-founder of Advantage Performance Group, and I'll be your host and MC today, trying to add some color commentary and questions to the presentation as Lou goes through it. And before I introduce Lou, I just want to review a few housekeeping details. We are muting your lines to eliminate the background noise during Lou's presentation, and time permitting, which normally happens, we will open the phones for a Q&A at the end of the presentation and give you instructions on how to participate at that point. And with regard to note-taking, you need not be concerned with taking down anything on the slides, as we're happy to make those available to you through your Advantage partner in charge of your account. So it's my pleasure at this point to introduce our speaker and Lou Schachter, whose vision and insights have really helped to shape the sales leadership practice at BTS, where he is the Senior Vice President in charge of the global sales practice. And global is certainly true. It's unusual, but I do think Lou's actually home in New York today, but often found in many different continents and around the globe working with sales organizations, so he brings that perspective. What I really enjoy about working with Lou is that he is a consultant who's not afraid to get his hands dirty when he does projects. I think he's ridden in delivery vans and worked sales counters and observed thousands of face-to-face and telephone sales calls. And before joining the BTS team, Lou actually created learning programs for salespeople at a variety of companies, both big and small, but also was in sales himself as an investment banker and working with a specialized communications firm. So he brings the academic background from a Wharton school with the practical intelligence and analytical ability, but he also brings the street smarts and experience of selling to Fortune 500 companies and small businesses, as well as large governments. So welcome, Lou, and I'm going to turn the presentation over to you.
Thanks, John. It's always a pleasure to do these with you, and I appreciate everyone taking time out of their no doubt busy days to share a little bit of that with us. We think we have some things to share with you today that will be very powerful and immediately useful to you. We thought we'd start by going back to the theme of these APG webcasts, which is thriving in tough times. And there's really no doubt that that's what these times are. But there's some good news. Just as you see the sun peeking out over the horizon in the picture, there is some good news to focus on. And from reading the papers and watching all the media, all you hear about every day is how businesses are cost-cutting. And it's easy to think that every boardroom or CEO suite conversation today starts with how to cut costs. But there's actually one step before that that you don't hear about as much in the media, and that is a conversation about revenue forecasting. Every boardroom or CEO suite conversation actually starts with a discussion about whether the company is going to meet its sales forecast. And these conversations, which used to happen monthly, are now happening weekly. Sales leaders are under enormous pressure to meet their forecasts. Those forecasts, whether they make them or not, is what drives the cost cutting. Now, this is actually an opportunity. First, those of you who are responsible for sales or sales training in your organizations have an ability to make a big difference in your company's results if you can make a business case for how your work will lead to stronger sales. That's the name of the game right now. Second, think about your customers. Anything that you can do to drive their revenue through your offerings will get people to listen. Salespeople can get so focused on prices and discounting that they forget their ability to help their customers improve their revenue situation. As we begin to share in this presentation what we're observing today, keep this in mind. Over the last several years, we've seen a number of leading companies take a new approach to sales. And we're going to show you that approach in a moment. What we're seeing now during the economic crisis is not a different approach, but rather a faster adoption of the new approach, both by companies that were doing it already and by companies that had not yet started. But the current conditions mean that almost every company now needs to transform its sales approach. Our conclusions come from two types of research that we are engaged in continuously. First, BTS and APG work with over half of the Fortune 500, as well as dozens of mid-market companies. Our consulting with these firms keeps us close to what companies are doing today, lets us see who are the leaders, and allows us to track what they're doing differently. In addition, we have interviewed close to 200 executives over the past few years to identify how they make their purchasing decisions, how they define value, and what they expect of the salespeople who call on them. Together, those two types of research formed the basis for our book, which John mentioned, The Mind of the Customer, which was released 3 years ago by McGraw-Hill. And at the end of the presentation, we'll tell you how you can get a free copy of the book. So our agenda today is going to look at three main topics. One, how sales is evolving. Two, the five pillars of sales transformation. And then three, how the economic crisis is affecting each of these pillars and how companies are using the pillars to get through the crisis. And then finally, as John mentioned, we'll wrap up with some Q&A. Those of you who participated in my previous webcast will have seen the next two slides before. I'll cover them quickly because they form the basic models behind our work, and then the remaining content is all new and takes us in a different direction. So let's talk a bit about the evolution of sales. Until about 20 years ago, sales was really all about products. The measure of a salesperson was how much product knowledge they had and their ability to figure out what needs the customer had and to match the right products with those needs, describing the features and benefits of the products along the way. But two big things happened in those last 20 years. One is that in almost every industry, low-cost providers popped up around the world who could offer the same products at a lower price. That put, of course, enormous downward pressure on prices and on margins. At the same time, the Internet developed and made product knowledge in most industries available on the web. So the salesperson's value as a product knowledge provider began to diminish. In response to that, solution selling developed. And you're probably all familiar with solution selling. Selling solutions means wrapping products together with services to solve some business problem that the customers have in the business process that purchase is being made. The services tend to include things like financing and training, integrating with existing systems, customization, service, and support. And what's been great about selling solutions is that the margins on those services tend to be much higher than on the underlying products. But what's happening now is that everyone offers solutions, and they're becoming commoditized too, which of course is putting downward pressure on the margins. So a new way of selling is beginning to emerge, and today's leading sales forces have discovered that the way to stand out is to focus on accelerating the customer's desired business results. That means not just filling a need or solving a problem, though you have to continue to sell products and solutions, but also finding ways that your product or service can directly enable the customer to accelerate its desired performance. Selling this way requires a new set of skills, and that's what we're going to focus on for the remainder of this program. The good news here is that there are much higher margins available when you truly do impact your customers' business results. So it's your job to become the accelerator. How do you accelerate the results the customer is trying to achieve? Well, here's an example from Xerox. If you think about Xerox a long time ago, and I think John is an old Xerox sales guy, in fact, 20 years ago, Xerox sold copiers. That's what they were known for. From there, Xerox moved to selling solutions by adding services along with their copiers, things like financing and training to use the copiers and service contracts, integration with office systems, and different kinds of warranties. Well, what does Xerox do today? They've redefined themselves so that they're no longer a copier company, but now a document company. They're helping their customers answer the questions, how can I manage document flow better? And that is true whether the documents are electronic and never printed, or whether they are indeed printed documents. This new type of selling focuses on accelerating customers' business results and requires us to change our view of a salesperson from someone here to pitch the customer to someone here to help the customer and get them results. Most organizations don't have trouble with what they want to do. They have trouble getting there, figuring out how to get it done. And as I'm going to show you in a second, the kinds of skills that a salesperson needs to accelerate the customer's business results are really somewhat different than what they needed to be a good product seller or a solution seller. To be a good product seller, we mentioned you needed product knowledge. To be a good solution seller, you needed those great consultative selling skills and the ability to problem solve. Now, to accelerate the customer's business results, you also need a higher level of business acumen than we've ever required salespeople to have before.
So Lou, are you saying that the model, as it was 3 years ago when you looked at it, and in today's context of the economy, not only holds up, but is almost double-click on it? You can say it's even more important that a salesperson's at that level.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing companies who were still focusing on moving from product selling to solution selling now realize that that's not sufficient, and they are definitely on the path to accelerating the customer's business results because that's what their customers are demanding of them.
Okay, got it.
So let's dive deeper into what it takes to accelerate your customer's business results. As you can see here, there are five pillars of sales transformation, and I'll just touch on them quickly, and then we'll go into what they mean in a recessionary environment. Our clients have been using this model, and they find it a really useful way of organizing their thinking about sales transformations, and we define sales transformations as really moving from product to solution selling to accelerating your customer's business results. And this model helps describe the skills and behaviors that you need to instill in your salespeople if you want to be successful in that transformation. So the first pillar up top is called understand your customer, and that's the business acumen piece. Do your salespeople understand what drives the customer's business, what business goals they've set, in other words, what results so you can help them get there faster, what business challenges they face on the way to getting those results, what opportunities exist in their marketplace to get there faster, what their value proposition is to their customers and how they can improve it, and what key performance indicators or metrics they use to measure their success. These are a series of things that historically we haven't taught salespeople, although in the last couple of years there's been a much greater emphasis on doing this, and particularly in the context of enabling salespeople to have conversations with executives in their customer organizations. The second pillar on the right-hand side is called create business impact. We all throw around the word value in our world. We certainly do as much as anyone else does, and we like to define value as business impact. The bulk of the work that we do is helping salesforces who do B2B selling, and in those cases, business impact is a good way of thinking about value. How can you help them get to their results faster? In this pillar is the ability to ask sales questions that not only benefit you as the seller, but benefit the customer in thinking about their business, and in particular, focus not just on the pain and problems that they experience, which is generally what we've taught salespeople to ask about in the solution selling style, to instead also asking questions about the business results they're trying to achieve and the opportunities they can leverage to get there faster. In addition to thinking about sales questioning, this pillar also includes the notion of being able to quantify the business impact that you can have on the customer and being able to articulate that to a customer in a way that makes sense to them, as well as aligning sales processes with the customer's buying cycle.
And Lou, it's probably fair to say that has changed a great deal in this situation, because we may think we knew our existing customers or prospects' interpretation of our value, but now what they value has changed a great deal.
Definitely. In this environment, they are valuing different things, or they are valuing some of the same things in a slightly different way. And we'll, of course, be going deeper into that in a few minutes. Communicate value is all about conveying the business impact that your offerings generate for the customer. And that means a couple of different things. Most importantly, it means negotiating in a collaborative way that is focused on your company's interests and your customers' interests in a way that makes the negotiation not just one-dimensional on price, but multidimensional. And secondly, it involves presentations that are not just one-way interactions with the salesperson in front of the room with a deck of slides, but with the ability to facilitate an interactive sales conversation. The third pillar, manage account strategy, is about creating long-term strategies that look at account plans and opportunity plans that really generate results not only for you but for the customer. Being able to create those account strategies fast and effectively, it has been very difficult for companies to do. Some do it incredibly well, but those are still very few. This is the one pillar that I think companies struggle with the most. And then in the center, of course, you see coach performance, and that's really more for sales managers. Sales managers coaching the performance of salespeople on the four other pillars and making sure that they have the skills to do that and are coaching rather than selling. Obviously, the sales manager, in addition to needing coaching skills, needs the specific ability to coach the other four pillars, as well as skills around selection and managing performance and coaching teams virtually and globally and coaching different types of performers, coaching to the sales funnel, etc. Most importantly, the leverage in really making a sales transformation occur is with the sales manager. They have to be aligned with the strategy, be prepared to defend it to those who are resistant to change, and to coach all the new behaviors. Without this, transformations don't succeed. So that's why we've put them at the center.
And Lou, you've organized the sales practice content from BTS in terms of training offerings against this model then. This is your organizing principle for the IP that you and your team develop.
Exactly, and it's not actually something that I think we thought of as much as our customers took it there. As we consulted with them on helping them through sales transformations, it seemed like this is a really good organizing model that now dozens of companies use to structure their sales transformation process.
Good. Got it.
And for everybody else, we'd be happy to take questions on either of these models when we get to the end, and we'll remind you that when we get a little bit closer. But if you have some questions, jot them down, and we'll be happy to answer them.
So now we're going to look at each one of these and maybe how it's changed in the context of the current economy.
Exactly. So that first pillar, of course, was understand your customer. Well, let's take a deeper look at that. We often say to salespeople in our programs that if you can remember nothing else about how to sell value, remember to focus on how your offerings can help the customer overcome a business challenge. And by business challenge, we mean not just a problem in the business process surrounding the product or service to be bought, but a challenge that the overall business is struggling with. A good way to think about this is that if they're going to accelerate the customer's business results, your salespeople need to understand three types of challenges the customer faces. At the center, execution challenges, the issues that make it difficult for the customer to execute their strategy, particularly those internal obstacles that involve their finances and operations. Next are marketplace challenges. These are the issues that your customers face in dealing with their customers and with their competitors. And finally, on the outer ring are global challenges. These are the struggles that almost all companies have today, and many of them are due to the increasingly global environment companies operate in. So now let's look at what's changing due to the recession. Customers have always been focused on ways to reduce operational costs. Now the message that gets their attention is the ability to help them cut their costs very quickly. The time element is new. That message of helping customers use your products or services to cut costs quickly is the message that salespeople should be armed with. And the salespeople need the consultative expertise to understand the customer's business process well enough to explain how the costs can be reduced. Likewise, over the last several years, achieving operational excellence has always been one of customers' top priorities in our research. That phrase has a combination of improving quality and efficiency embedded in it. Now, however, the balance is shifting much more to productivity or efficiency. Again, do your salespeople know how to communicate how your offerings create efficiencies for your customers? And let me give you a specific example of that. When UPS is able to get a customer of theirs to use its online shipping technology rather than printing out paper shipping labels and filling them out manually, the customer winds up saving significant time in labor costs. Often they can actually eliminate positions. And mistakes are greatly reduced, so shipments get to the right place at the right time. Plus, by doing that, the customer becomes much more loyal to UPS because they get trained to use the UPS system. So that's an example of where you can improve the customer's efficiency and get greater loyalty at the same time. It's also a way of creating cost savings for your customer that don't get at reducing the price for your basic service. Acquiring new customers has always been important, but in recessions, it becomes a bigger priority because as competitors weaken due to financial issues, their customers are up for grabs. Can your salespeople help your customers expand their market share? Can they help your customers reduce their own customers' defections to competitors? So here's an example of that. Symantec, which is an APG client, sells Norton antivirus and other internet security products. Among the channels they sell through are computer manufacturers like Sony and HP. Recent improvements in the Norton products mean the security software loads faster each time you start your computer, and therefore the boot up process is faster. That makes the user experience better for consumers who use Sony and HP machines. That boot up time is one of the things we all use to measure the performance of our computer, and things that load up front like security software can really affect that. So as Symantec makes the computer boot up faster, that improves the user or consumer experience of the Sony or HP product, and that helps those companies retain their consumers and add market share more easily. So the key here is to enable the salespeople to be able to articulate those kinds of advantages to the customer. And then one more slide on understand your customer as we finish up pillar one. For years, your customers have been focused on how global consolidation was reshaping their industry. Their suppliers were consolidating, their own customers were consolidating, and they themselves may have been involved in mergers or acquisitions. That, of course, has changed. With the exception of one or two industries like pharma, there is very little global consolidation right now, but there still is a critical global concern. Today, that customer's concern is about whether the company is managing risks effectively in the many markets in which it operates. The global economic crisis has helped people recognize that risk cannot be ignored. Today's customers are looking at risk in their supply chain, such as losing a key supplier, and risk in their customer base, such as credit risk, if their customers are in certain industries. At the same time, while customers continue to want to protect their corporate reputation, they are also now concerned with maintaining their own access to credit during the liquidity crunch. So what does this mean to your sales force? Well, think back to the opening model. If in today's world, sales is becoming all about your ability to accelerate your customers' business results, then your salespeople have to demonstrate that they understand what is happening not just to the customer's business process that they've always sold into, but what's happening to the business as a whole. If your offering can affect risk or credit issues, fantastic. But even if it can't, your salespeople have to communicate that they understand the environment that customers are operating in.
So Lou, this level of business acumen, it makes me think that your model here could be for a conversation or a probing model where you talk about these execution challenges, the marketplace challenges, and the global challenges, or perhaps you even test these assumptions and say, you know, is global risk management changing for you as an existing customer or a prospect, just to begin the dialogue. And then I don't know, I would look at this and say you probably go from the outside ring in the conversation to the inside ring of the conversation to get it down to their operational execution challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are a couple of great points there. One of the interesting things in our research is that customers tell us that the number one thing a salesperson can do to build credibility is to ask informed questions about the customer's business. And the key word there is actually informed. So when you frame those questions, you want to be able to say things like, we know that similar companies in your industries are dealing with challenge X. How are you wrestling with that? Or from reading your most recent presentation to investment analysts, we know that you're concerned with Y. How does that affect your ability to do such and such? And as for the sequencing, what we find is that if you're dealing with an executive, it does indeed, as you mentioned, make sense to start on the outer ring and work your way in. And if you're dealing with a more technical buyer, it often makes sense to start at the center and work your way out and build those connections.
Ah, that's good. I like that. Should we look at the next pillar?
Here we go. The pillar two is create business impact. And as you can see here, we've listed about 10 dimensions of value. Now, when sales forces were focused on product selling, which was the first stage in our evolution of sales, which you can see in the upper right, the customer's decision was mainly about price. As you move to solution selling, it's no longer just price. The 10 dimensions here all become important. And in a moment, we'll show you what happens when you switch to accelerator selling. But even at this stage, most salespeople really haven't gotten this message. They still use price as the only lever to drive the sale. And that, of course, has significant negative consequences for your margins. With the recession and with the movement toward accelerator selling, it gets even more complicated. So now you can see that in a recessionary environment, it's more important than ever to link your offerings to your customers' desired business results. We've added a few new dimensions of value to the previous slide and bold-faced one that was already there. Payment terms now become a very useful part of the purchase if they free up other credit. And as we noted earlier, revenue and its ability to create market share along with cash flow are really critical. Your salespeople today have to be able to articulate how your offerings can drive your customers' revenue growth or cash flow. And we also talked about efficiency, fast cost reductions, and risk reduction as well. Now, one of the trends here is what customers used to mainly value were things that would impact their income statement. Now it's about impacting their balance sheet and their income statement. Can your salespeople speak that language? Do they understand cash flow and liquidity well enough to have a conversation about them with the customer? They don't have to be accountants, but they do need to understand two concepts: how cash flow and liquidity affect your customer's business, and how your offerings create or support cash flow and liquidity.
You know, it reminds me, Lou, too, that it's almost like going in with a point of view of the strategy to get through these economic times and adding this to the conversation as opposed to just going back with the same messaging, you know, here I am again and I know things are tough, but here I am now and here's what I understand organizations like yours can do during these times to not just survive but maybe thrive and actually, you know, to take a next step in market share from your competitors.
Yeah, we think there are two big things that salespeople need to do differently today. One is they have to go in and acknowledge that the customer's situation has changed, that their business is different than it was 6 or 8 months ago. And then number two, they have to be able to articulate the things that customers can do to improve their business and how their offerings can actually help the customer do that.
You know, there was an article in the New Yorker that Glenn Jackson, my co-founding partner, sent me yesterday that I'll make available to the Advantage partners in charge so that they can get it to our clients here. But it actually talked about how certain companies in the past, well-researched studies, who invested heavily during the recession in things like marketing or sales, et cetera, actually accelerated through the recession and came out the other end with more market share and in some cases actually putting their competition almost out of business because of their very aggressive strategy during the recession time.
Yeah, there's some great data on that, and it's hard for companies to do, but for companies who have the right leaders who see that opportunity, that is a fantastic strategy. Let's go on to pillar three. With everything we've been talking about, you can imagine the importance of communicating value. Another way to think about this pillar is to call it capturing value, which is what both Procter & Gamble and HP refer to it as. The two big gaps you tend to see in this pillar are that salespeople often negotiate on price rather than on understanding all the interests a customer has. If you think back to the dimensions of value on the last slide, imagine how much more multidimensional the negotiation could be. And the second gap is that most salespeople have been trained to deliver presentations. Instead, what customers in our research tell us today is they want an interactive discussion which requires a level of facilitation skills we've generally not taught salespeople. And in a moment, I'll explain more about why those facilitation skills are becoming increasingly important.
And why do they use capturing? What's the notion there?
So the idea is that you create the value in the second pillar, and then you have to capture some of the value of that. So some of it goes to the customer, but Procter & Gamble or HP deserve a share of that additional value that is created.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
So it's more, in their view, and understandably, it's more than just communicating it. It's making sure they get their fair piece of it. So now, what's happening in the recession? Well, customers know that they can press hard on price. In fact, many companies are training their buyers to do exactly that. So that point I just made about negotiating on a broad range of interests becomes absolutely critical. In this environment, discounting can quickly feed on itself, and some companies find themselves destroying their own margins in the name of preserving market share. But as we just explored, price is not the only lever. Every customer has other interests. Second, when you successfully displace a competitor from the account, that change is going to have consequences for the customer. Often, the people in your customer organization who use or interact with your product are not those who made the decision to switch. The switch then impacts their jobs, and they have to do things differently. We're all human, and we all resist change. What executives are telling us is that, particularly in today's cost-cutting environment, they do not have the resources to guide their people through that change process. They're counting on the salesperson from your company to play that role of change manager. Once again, that requires a set of skills we haven't had to teach salespeople until now. We've taught them in some cases to be good project managers, but not change managers. And we haven't taught them facilitation skills, which can help tremendously with the discussions that drive change. That can be an uncomfortable shift for a salesperson who hasn't received training and coaching. And remember, if you don't give your salespeople those skills, then the customer will resist switching suppliers.
I like that distinction between project management and change management.
Yeah, it's really a different way of thinking about it, and it's very much from the customer's point of view. So let's go to pillar four, which is, of course, manage account strategy. Many companies have invested in the account strategy process or opportunity strategy process, but so often these fail. Salespeople just don't use them, or they put the least information in that will allow them to check off that box. And for better or worse, somehow account strategy has gotten caught up in all the complexity around CRM systems. And salespeople obviously feel a certain way about entering data into the CRM, and account strategies have really gotten caught up in all that. So the good news is that there are account strategy approaches that do work, and you can see the attributes of those systems on the right. They're fast, and they're visual, and they're based on the customer's buying process, not your selling process. I'd be happy to answer some more questions about this at the end of the presentation. The sales forces that do this the best actually create strategies jointly with their most critical customers. So it's not just about creating a long-term strategy for where you want to go in growing this customer's business, but where they're going in their business and how your company can help support them in getting there. And if you can sit down at the same table with them, you get miles further. One of the visuals that I always think of that differentiates the sort of accelerator selling from the earlier forms of selling is, instead of thinking of your salesperson and your customer sitting across a table from each other, imagine them on both on the same side of the table. So things like negotiation and account strategy and other things really become about a partnership process and working together to achieve shared results rather than negotiating with one another. Now, let me tell you a quick story and share with you a little graph here. We're going to talk about the impact during a recession of not having good account and opportunity strategy processes. Last week, I was talking to one of America's most respected manufacturers, and here's what they said about their opportunity strategy process. This is a quote. Our people don't take the process seriously. They're not held accountable for it, and so not everyone is putting data into the system. When we ask them about it, they say that the tools we provided them force them to enter data about which stage of the sales cycle they're in that has no meaning to themselves or their customers, end quote. And by the way, they're using one of the most popular account strategy processes that some of you may be using yourselves. So this company told us they are forecasting based on hypotheses rather than data. Their forecasts are off plus or minus 30% each quarter, which is, of course, a 60% range. Their forecast might be 70% of what they actually sell or 130% of what they actually sell. The downstream impact of that is enormous. As you can see, they build very expensive equipment. It costs several hundred thousand dollars per item. And they're either facing stockouts, as you can see on the left, which drives customers to purchase from other suppliers since what they offer is not that competitively differentiated, or they face significant excess inventory at a very high value, which sucks up their company's cash. So imagine the impact of that on their income statement and balance sheet. So account and opportunity strategy processes that work are not a nice-to-have. They are a must-have. Remember what we said at the beginning of this presentation. The leading edge is revenue. It all starts with sales forecasts. If your forecasts don't have credibility, your sales leader is very much at risk. And the good news here is there are skills you can teach your salespeople to become much more effective at this.
I like this chart. It'd be a good one to show to salespeople and ask them if they could explain it.
Right. And we find that there are really two types of business acumen that are turning out to be increasingly valuable to salespeople. One is taking a day to understand how their own company makes money. And if you think of revenue as a pipeline, every company has leaks in that pipe along the way. If you can help them understand what leaks they can influence, like excess inventory or stockouts, it begins to reshape the way they think about the business. The second type of business acumen that's really powerful is to actually spend a day managing a business in one of the industries they call on. That dramatically changes the nature of the conversation they're able to have with executives and their customer organizations because they see the kinds of strategic decisions those customers face every day.
Well, you think of the times when you put the sales leader in the role of manufacturing leader and the manufacturing leader in the role of sales leader during a business simulation and the ahas that they both realize from doing each other's job, right?
Yeah, exactly. We worked with a tech company a couple of years ago, and we built a simulation for them where they experienced managing their customer's business, and then about halfway through the simulation, their supplier had a number of errors and problems in what they were delivering, and those errors were exactly mimicking some real-life experiences that this tech company had with its customers a couple of years before. And as a result, it completely changed the way they thought about the impact on their customers' business when things go wrong. And then as a second cycle to that, they actually wound up going through that simulation with their customers and creating that sort of same side of the table experience that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, it would be nice if everyone could figure out how to impact this need because it probably exists in almost every corporation everyone's calling on, right?
Absolutely.
Somewhere. Okay.
So, John, this is your favorite pillar. I know coach performance, and this is really the single most important lever you have to improve the performance of salespeople. Some of you may be familiar with this data. It's from the Sales Effectiveness Council, which studied 2,600 salespeople and 460 sales managers globally. As you can see, when salespeople have managers who are highly effective at coaching, on average, they achieve 102% of their goal. When they receive a low level of coaching, salespeople achieve only 83% of their goal. So there's a 19% gap there. And if you, just for a moment in your head, take that 19% gap and multiply it by the amount of revenue your team produces, imagine if you could increase sales by that dollar amount. And you actually can through coaching. So let's look at how and let's look at coaching in the context of the recession.
Yeah, I think a lot of our clients today have all hands on deck with coaching, making sure that the managers are in the field, you know, 4 days out of five instead of in the office pushing paper.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this recessionary environment, the sales managers now, I mean, they've always been pulled many different directions, but now it's getting even more complicated. There may be travel restrictions that make it harder for them to spend time with reps. They may be pulled back into sales activities rather than coaching, because of reductions in the number of salesperson positions. They may have to manage more salespeople because the number of sales managers has been reduced. And and they may be asked to do more skill building with reps because the L&D budget has been reduced.
So it's sort of the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, exactly. And for those companies who've really invested in making sure their sales managers are coaching over the last few years and giving them the skills to do that, there can be tension right now of pulling them back into older behaviors.
Can you just repeat the ones that you just said? Because those are good. So they're...
Yeah, so there are four of them. So travel restrictions,
right,
mean that they can may not be able to obviously spend as much time with reps.
Right.
They can be pulled back into sales activities because there are fewer salespeople. And, of course, along with that is even greater pressure to get every deal closed if they're going to meet forecasts.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is they may have more salespeople under them because the number of sales managers has been reduced or open positions haven't been filled.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one is they may be asked to do more skill building with reps because the L&D budget has been reduced. There's just not as much training going on.
So onboarding processes, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good example of it. Now, some companies today are actually, in this climate, investing more in skill building for their sales managers. They see this as a time when they can't reach as many people, and it makes sense to devote their limited resources to sales managers. The secret, if you're going to do this, is not just to provide new skills to sales managers in the hope they will transfer them to salespeople, but to provide at the same time the coaching skills needed to make that transfer successful. We're also seeing a greater emphasis on coaching skills that sales managers can use while with reps in the field, and on coaching skills that sales managers can use when they manage people virtually, because so many sales forces have moved to that model. So we've given you a lot to think about, and hopefully some of it is relevant to some of the challenges you're facing right now. Let's give you a chance to ask some questions. Once again, just in summary, we took you through the evolution of sales and then the five pillars that are needed to achieve sales transformation across that evolution, as well as what the recession is doing in each one of those areas. And I'd be happy now to take some more questions from John, as well as from anybody on the call. At this point, if you would like to ask a question, you need to press star 6, and then your line will become unmuted.
Lou, I have one. I know you've been spending time out of the country in other sales organizations that are global. Are you basically seeing what you see here in the States, in the UK or South Africa or Australia or Hong Kong?
You know, interestingly enough, we are seeing the very same trends, and for a number of reasons. One, because so many companies are global today, whether they're based in Asia or Europe or the U.S., but also because if you are in the business-to-business sales world, this is what customers are demanding, and the pressures on them to achieve their business results are so high that they're looking for value from salespeople in a way that gets them to those results faster. There are, of course, cultural differences in each of those countries. There are somewhat different ways that people learn, obviously different skill sets that people are hiring for, very different labor markets, but the underlying themes are absolutely the same.
Sounds like we might have had someone on mute.
Lou, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Lou. Curious, obviously every situation is different and every corporation is different, but in the realities of limited budgets, if you had to pick one of these areas, if you assume that there were kind of equal weaknesses everywhere and you had to pick one area to focus on first or only, what would that be? And again, granted, everything's different, but what's your gut sense on that?
That's a great question, and I get that a lot. It's very hard to achieve success on all five pillars at once. And in general, these types of transformations take anywhere from 18 to 36 months and are really ongoing processes. But very frequently I get the question, well, where do we start? And I'm going to answer that by saying two places. The companies that are most successful doing this start first with making sure the sales managers are coaching, so starting in the center. If you don't have sales managers effectively coaching, any money that you invest in the other pillars will not get its maximum return because those skills won't be reinforced by the sales managers after people get back into the field. So coaching is primary. The place that people start with salespeople is with understanding the customer. So if you think about it, that understanding of what the customer is trying to do in their business actually drives the other three pillars. You can't create business impact or communicate value or manage account strategy if you don't deeply understand your customer. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Lou, this question is about implementation, and it kind of follows with what was just asked, but as you've talked with different companies and as you've helped them try to get to that level of accelerator and results, what have you seen generally have been the biggest obstacles? If somebody really wants to move forward in an implementation and get to that level, what are the things that they need to consider as being the big obstacles to overcome?
A great question, Rex. So like any change initiative, and that's very much what this is, it starts with alignment in the leadership of the company around what the transformation involves and what it's going to achieve. That is not just the sales leader, but the overall leaders, even from other functions. If you start there, you're much better off. Then the second piece is, of course, the sales leadership, getting them engaged in what needs to be different. We find that learning initiatives can often fail if at the beginning a good case for change is not communicated. So to do it successfully, you've got to change the mindsets of the sales force. And that involves understanding that they probably weren't doing anything wrong before, but the market is changing around them. And as a result of that, there are things that they do today that they're going to need to do differently. The normal way to approach that is to cascade from the sales leadership to the sales managers to the sales people, that sort of change process. Not a huge investment and not a big time consumer. You can do it in about 3 or 4 hours. But if you don't have that conversation in a focused, centralized way, people are going to have it at the water cooler, or I guess Twitter would be today's virtual equivalent of the water cooler. They're going to have that conversation one way or another. So I would say doing the upfront work right is an obstacle. Another obstacle is, of course, the one that I just mentioned. If you don't prepare the sales managers to coach effectively, then you're not going to make the change as fast as you otherwise might. John, you probably have some thoughts about this area because you've been involved in lots of these things as well.
I mean, to me, it's sort of like there's no better time to have a burning platform for any change initiative. So many times when we're selling, a client might say, geez, you know, things are so good. We're so busy. We're clearing so many orders through the warehouse. I can't take my people out of the field right now to train them. So, you know, now, in some respects, if you can't make a business case for change for most organizations to sell in this new environment, now, I don't think you'll ever be able to make the case.
And, Lou, another question on that. Are you seeing that most salespeople have the ability to get to that level that you've described, or are you seeing companies that do this successfully that there is some amount of salesperson turnover? I mean, is there any kind of concern about whether or not people can reach that level?
Great question, and that actually gives me a chance to share another piece of this model. One of the things we often see is that not every customer wants to buy in a way that's accelerating about their business results. We absolutely acknowledge that. So companies are getting smarter about segmenting their sales force. And in fact, our sales transformation work often follows on the heels of McKinsey, other consulting firms as well, but most often McKinsey, which goes in and helps resegment a sales force, their customers, and realign salespeople to different positions. One of the things that they do really well is to identify which customers are going to be basically product buyers, so the left-hand side of the model. And then you want to serve those customers through inside sales functions or the web in ways that reduce your cost to serve those customers. The last thing you want to be doing is taking a field salesperson and sending them out to do a face-to-face visit with someone who's buying basically on price. You want to shift that business to the web. then you want to focus your salespeople on solutions and accelerators, and you very much want to take those that are going to be best at accelerating business results and align them with your most strategic accounts, which is part of what McKinsey does. Now, we've been following McKinsey into a lot of different places over the last couple of years, and I just found out, which is really interesting, that they've begun to adopt our model. They use this product solutions accelerators model as they work with customers to think about different ways the sales force can be organized.
You know, another part of segmentation to me, too, Lou, is just almost assessing each one of your prospects and clients and saying, are they in the hunker down, cut cost, ride out the storm mode, or do they have leadership and strategy that says, no, this is the time when we're going to take share, invest in things, move forward, and come out of this thing on the other end much stronger than we were when we started. And if you could kind of know where their strategy is, then you could align what you're doing to serve that customer, you know, based on that.
Definitely. And along with the assessing of customers and segmenting them appropriately, there is the assessing of your salespeople, which gets back to Rex's question as well. And, of course, the other advantage, Alliance partner HR Chally has a really successful model for measuring which salespeople will be effective in this new environment.
Hadn't thought about it, but that's a good point. Thank you. Well, should we move on to next steps? Are there any other questions from our attendees?
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Hi, yes. You talked about the impact of bad forecasts, and there was a comment made about the skills you train in order to improve forecasts. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple of parts to that. One is that salespeople see funnel activity entries as an academic exercise, and they don't understand the business impact of that on their own company. And so there are pretty quick ways within a one-day program you can get people to see the real impact on their company's income statement and balance sheet from errors in forecasts. The second piece is working with them to identify the right information to track their progress through the funnel. So as I mentioned earlier, if your sales funnel structure has been around for a while, it may have milestone definitions that are driven by fairly arbitrary sales process boundaries, not by how customers buy. So if you think about a customer's buying process, which we define in 6 stages, the first of which is recognizing the need for a purchase, then evaluating purchase options, then resolving concerns about the purchase, which is where the negotiation occurs, making the decision, and then implementation, and finally evaluating the results of the implementation, which leads to the beginning of the next cycle. So that if you think of it in a circle, that's probably the best way to do it. Now, companies that change their sales funnel process to match the customer's buying process have a much higher rate of accuracy in their funnel. What we see way too often is the customer's really in the stage of just recognizing the need for a purchase, but the salesperson goes in for a meeting, drops off a proposal, and suddenly now you're in stage 4 of the funnel on the forecast sheet when the customer's not anywhere close to that. This gives me actually a chance to mention another APG partner, which is Market Partners, which does great research with your company's customers to find out what their buying processes are and then create sales processes that align with those buying processes. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for that question. Anything else? Any other questions from our audience? Cool, Lou, this has been great. What actions, call to actions, might we have for our attendees?
We have 3 great prizes for today's participants.
Door number 2.
First of all, if you want to leverage any of the thinking in this presentation, the best thing to do is to contact your Advantage partner, and you can access any of these 3. First of all, we'd be happy to send you a free copy of our book, The Mind of the Customer. You can also invite us to share what the best sales forces are doing to transform their organizations today. We have a very cool 2 to 3 hour interactive presentation based around our engage map approach, which you can see in the center there, which looks at the different skills and capabilities that are required as you move from product through solution to accelerator selling, some of the forces that are shaping the pressures on sales leaders today, what companies engage in when they do a sales force transformation, not just from a learning and development perspective, but more generally, as well as an opportunity to explore what pillars you are already proficient in and which ones you need to invest in going forward. So that's a 2 to 3 hour interactive presentation that I and others facilitate. We'd be happy to do in your organization if we can arrange to meet with your top sales leaders. And then finally, you are welcome to a copy of this presentation, and your APG partner can provide that for you as well.
Well, Lou, I would just like to, again, thank you personally, and I know our audience feels likewise. I hope that they do, and you bring such a nice level of reality to these topics, and you take complex things and make them simple for us, and always enjoy working with you, your level of preparation, your insights from doing real work in the field and around the world is just of great value to us. So thanks for being such a good partner.
Thank you, and thanks to everybody who participated on the call. Hope it was a worthwhile use of your time, and look forward to working with you further.
You got it. Talk to you soon. Bye, everybody. Make it a great day.
Thank you.